Hey, hey, hey. Thanks for tuning in. Anthony Trucks joins us on today's episode and talks about his incredible journey from foster care to adoption to being a standout linebacker at the University of Oregon and playing in the NFL. If you look at the statistics, Anthony should have never graduated college, and he was more likely to end up in jail than the NFL. It's an incredible story from an incredible guy. Today, he's a business owner where he consults with multi-million dollar companies and helps people with personal coaching in their business ventures, but he's also starting to focus more on helping all types of people in life, you know, just everything, just becoming better people. I highly recommend you check him out on his website, anthonytrucks.com. Follow him on Instagram at Anthony Trucks and check out his YouTube channel. All of this will be linked under the guest page at alphaomnia.com. So if you just want to hit it really quick, find all his pages. I'll post up a really cool video of Anthony up there as well. You can easily access all of that at alphaomnia.com. Anthony brings a lot of energy to the show and has great stories and knowledge to share. But first, I want to talk to you about Mugsy jeans. Mugsy jeans are the most comfortable men's jeans ever made. That's no exaggeration. These jeans are literally as comfortable as sweatpants. I'm telling you this as a true fan of Mugsy jeans myself. In fact, they're only advertising with us because I reached out to tell them how much I love their jeans. The magic is in their Mugsy denim. Mugsy's founder, Leo, spent 5 years working with industry experts to redesign the men's jean from the ground up. Their jeans are made from high-tech materials like synthetic silk, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? All you need to know is that Mugsy jeans are so soft, breathable, and flexible. You won't be able to wear any other jeans again after trying them on. Mugsy has free and easy returns, so you have nothing to lose by giving them a try. Do your legs a favor, head to MugsyJeans.com. That's MugsyJeans.com to get your own pair of ridiculously comfortable jeans today. No joke, Mugsy jeans are the only jeans I wear. I got a new pair a couple days ago, haven't taken them off. I also want to let you guys know about the apparel we have on our website, alphaomnia.com. We have crew necks with an AO on the front. They're super comfortable. Crew necks are perfect for the fall weather, perfect to get you going for the winter as well. Very comfortable. The sleeves are a little bit longer, so if you do have longer arms, you don't have to worry about them rolling up. You can wear them to work if you kind of have a casual setting at work. They're great around the house. If you're grocery shopping, you can work out in them. You can even go out, grab a beer with your friends while wearing these. We also have shirts. We have the American flag on the front left on your chest, and then Alpha Omnia spelled on the back down the spine. It's really cool, really dope shirt. These are 100% cotton, very comfortable. I can move around really, really well in them, and they're like the crew necks. Wear them out, grab a beer with your friends. Great around the house. If you're grocery shopping, you can also work out with them. They make your arms look big. I love them. We offer free shipping on all U.S. orders, so head over to alphaomnia.com and pick something before they sell out. Why should you be denied the right to be handsome? Well, the guys over at Handsome Pills have come up with a simple solution for that. Handsome Pills are a multivitamin formulated with all the essential components needed to living a healthy life. Each component plays a vital role in repairing and restoring your hair, skin, and nails. Monthly subscriptions start at a low cost of $16.99 a month, available online at handsomepills.com. And for the whole month of October, you can use the promo code HandsomeOctober for 15% off any order. So start living healthy, feel great, and most importantly, stay handsome. So make sure you guys cash in on this 15% off. Check them out, Handsome Pills. I take Handsome Pills every morning. I feel much healthier. I definitely feel the effects of it, and it's just a great start to my day. I can't wait for all of you to listen to this episode. Let's do it.
I don't do this for fun. Dun, dada, dun, dada. We ain't playing with dun, dada, dun, dada. Dun, dada, dun, dada. Heart, mind, body, and soul. I need your heart, mind, body, and soul. Heart, mind, body, and soul. I need your heart, mind, body, and soul. Now let's go. Let's go. Vibe with it, ride with it. Let's go. Let's go. Vibe with it, ride with it. Let's go. Get jiggy, vibe with it. Let's go. Let's go. Now let's go. Let's go. Someone bless me, I got the holy water. Feel it through your body, your medulla oblongata. Baby, feel the bounce, I got it from my mama.
Before we get rolling here, what's your most memorable play at Oregon when you were playing football?
Oh, it's a good one. Are we recording already?
Oh, yeah, we're going.
All right, so this was unique. So my senior year, we're playing, I think we're playing Cal. Now, this is what happened my senior year. All of a sudden, I started like coming on doing real well. My junior year was kind of so-so. My sophomore year, I hurt my shoulder, so I didn't even play much. So I started coming on the scene doing a lot. So all of a sudden, I'm leading the pack. I was 10 at the time, and like sacks, tackles for loss, forced fumbles, fumbles recovered. I'm doing real well. And then what ends up happening is like one of the weeks we're playing against, I don't know who it was. It might have been like Arizona or something. Like I'm doing well, and my position coach is one of those guys that he kind of wants to give you love, but he never wants to make you get your head too big. So I'm like doing well. And he's like, hey, you know, you're doing well. You're making some plays. He says, but I don't want to hear anything until you go in there and you, you know, you beat the running back. You make the sack. You force the fumble. You recover that fumble and scoop and score. Like, that's when I'll give you some love. Like, oh, that's pretty tall order, you know. So it's like he's joking when he's saying it. So we played Cal. We're playing Cal at home my senior year. I think it's like Joe Ayoub is the quarterback. And there's a play where I'm on the right-hand side. It's defense. They call it a blitz. And I'm like, I'm going, right? So I take off. I beat the running back. I get to the quarterback. I tackle him. I pretty much sack the quarterback, force the fumble, recover the fumble. But I was going down while I get it, so I didn't get a touchdown.
So he didn't give you the love?
Dude, I get off the field. I'm looking at him. As I'm walking off, I'm pointing at him. And as soon as I get close to him, he says, yeah, but you didn't score a touchdown.
But that's awesome. It's like you go through all of it. It's like you shed the block, get through it all, read the play right, made the big play, and you didn't finish it, man. You didn't finish it.
So that's kind of how – that's the story of my college. And the thing is, he's a phenomenal guy. Like, he was really good at teaching. Like, he was always really keen on this. He says, we're building football players. I get that. He says, but your mom and dad sent you here with me for 4 years. And my job – my watch is talking to me. He says, my job isn't to make you a better football player, to make you a better man. And so I've always kind of taken that with me. The people I work with and how I interact with human beings, it's not just to make you better at business, but to make you better as a human being, or not to make you better and just, you know, as a parent or whatever you do. But it's like, how can I touch your life to where when you leave my presence, you're better having been with me?
Yeah, no, that's awesome. What's this guy's name?
His name's Don Pelham. He's actually the position coach right now for linebackers at UCLA.
Damn.
They're not too good. Buddy's over there at UCLA.
Yeah, that's a big time program, and be linebackers coach over there. That's awesome. No, but that's great that, you know, I feel like a lot of coaches say that. They're like, yeah, we're here to play football and whatnot, but we're also here to build you guys up as men to, you know, set you guys up for the future, which is, you know, awesome. It's a beautiful thing. Exactly. So you started playing football, though, when you were 14. It's a little late start.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
And that was because your biological mother, she didn't let you, even though you were in foster care. I kind of want to get into that before, you know, we really dive into some of the other things, because you were put up into foster care when you were 3 years old. And I was, you know, reading and watching some of your videos, and that's really when you first started getting, like, remembering things in your life. Like, your earliest memories were part of your, you know, foster care, adoption, all this stuff. What was that like?
It's tough. There's always times in our life we can look back at and be like, man, those windows of time, like, they were dark and they sucked. And that's what I mean. For me, life started that way, unfortunately. But I started 3 years old. I can remember my mom, you know, giving us away, me and my three siblings. I can remember the day, the car, getting in the car, like, all that stuff. And it led me into a journey where for like the next 3 years, I bounced around between like five different foster homes. I was like starved and beaten in some house. It's like really heinous stuff. Ended in the family I'm with now. Unique thing is I'm the only black person in an all-white family besides my sister's husband now. He's a black guy. but that was my life, and I didn't have any outlets. So while in foster care, before I was adopted at 14, I spent 11 years in the system, and my real mom would not allow me to play sports. So I had to go to school and see all these you know, classmates, you know, coming back, and I played soccer or basketball or football, but I was not allowed to do it. Not to mention, like, you always have this kind of internal struggle with, there's no guarantee that the bed I woke up on today is the one I'm going to sleep on tomorrow. You can always be picked up and shifted around. So at 14, I had a chance to stand up in front of a judge and in front of my real mom and tell her I no longer want you to be my mom anymore, and severed the ties. It was called parental rights. I was able to get adopted, which opened up an incredible new world for me. The first great part was I could play football and hit somebody and not get in trouble. That was amazing.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it is, when you're in those tough times and you're kind of looking for the end tunnel, you're looking for that sense of like peace and being settled inside. And whenever we're kind of like, life's just, you've got a lot of stuff going at us, or we're trying to deal with problems or things just aren't working out, it's this like lack of being settled inside, and it's tough. Like, you use sleep, you're frustrated, you're tired a lot. Like, it's just, it all kind of adds up. And when you finally get to that point of like just peace, like, I knew I was gonna go to bed in the same bed. Like, I, for the first time, I had this thing I could do, which gave me a sense of like, I'm actually good at something. And that allowed me to settle down inside a little bit and actually pursue bigger goals for my life.
Yeah. You're no longer anxious. You're no longer nervous. How old were you when you moved in with that family?
I was six.
Six. So from 3 to 6, you were jumping house to house, being, you know, all these terrible situations, being starved, abused, beat, all that. And you weren't with your other siblings, correct?
No. So at first I was, at the very first home, I was with my brother. And then after that, we were all dispersed. So I didn't, I mean, I kept in slight contact with him over the years. But I want to say after I was adopted at 14, I was actually in more contact. Because at that point, it was not, you know, in my real mom's hands, it was in my adoptive family's hands of who I could interact with, how I could see people. So yeah, found them all later on and kept, you know, good relationships with them all now.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good to hear. Why do they do it like that? Why do they split up the kids, brothers and sisters?
I don't know, man. So you got to keep in mind, like, the foster care system back then was not really very good. Nowadays there's video, social media, you can report stuff, but as a kid, 6 years old, they can do anything to you. And there's no way for you to report that. There's not, I mean, it's, you know, technology's not around. It's the late 80s. So realistically, I was called a paycheck. As long as I didn't die, you know, they got a paycheck. And so they didn't do much to kind of, you know, make sure the kids were taken care of and happy, in my opinion. And so they just, you know, wherever we could find a place to put these kids, they had a bed and that's where they put us. So sometimes they had two beds. A lot of times they didn't. So they just put you in a home and that was it. This funny thing, there was one point in time when I think I was like maybe like 3 or 4 like houses away from my little brother for like a year and no one ever told us. Like he was like around the corner and really? No one ever told us. It was the weirdest thing. Like, why did you guys not tell my little brothers around the corner? I can go hang out with them. And it was just, it was odd.
That's, and they knew and they just didn't tell you guys. That's so weird.
It was weird. Yeah. I mean, growing up and looking back on it now, like it's odd, man. Like as a kid who can speak out, you know, from that situation, looking back, like it wasn't run really well. Like there's a lot of things in this world that sadly are like that. And it's tough to be part of it, but at the same time, and it may be who I am. Like there are a lot of things that happen that I'm not happy they happen, but I think we have to gain through like a lot of hardships, appreciation for what took place in our life.
Yeah. And yeah, you're a living example of that, of appreciating everything that you do have in your life. One more thing that I've always wondered is, so you said that like they did treat you really bad. Was there never someone that you can tell, like when they picked you up, you could be like, yo, these people are bad people. There shouldn't be any more kids, or they just didn't care as long as you didn't die, as long as.
Well, you got to think every foster kid, the one thing that we want is to go back home.
Oh, okay.
It's one desire. So, you know, kids will make up a bunch of crazy stories hoping they go back home with mom and dad. So at the time, you know, I could have said something. I'm sure I did, but no one believes you. The moment you say that, oh, we didn't do that, this kid's crazy, you know, and that's just what happened. So next thing you know, it's you're off to the next house and no one believes you because, again, they know what you really want and they know you'll do anything to go back there.
Damn, that's absolutely wild. It's like that. But, yeah, all right, so then you can play football. What are you then, in seventh, eighth grade? Or is this your freshman year of high school? Yeah?
Eighth, yeah.
And were you always like a linebacker, always a running back, or what positions did you play?
So very first year I played quarterback, wide receiver, and like nose guard or something like that, like tackle, nose guard. I don't know what it was. I was really – every practice I was starting quarterback but never took a snap in a game. And then I'd play wide receiver, you know, as you know, but you're like youth, you don't throw the ball very much. But on defense, dude, I was an animal. Like I would blast through lines and sack quarterbacks like crazy. Like I just, for some reason, I had a knack of finding and tackling people. And so that was pretty much where I spent a lot of my time, was the defensive side of the ball. And then in high school, I got really good at receiver. I got a lot of scholarship offers to play receiver, but I ended up going to college and eventually NFL as a linebacker.
Yeah, that's awesome. When did you realize that you're really good at football? Like, that this is something you want to pursue?
I wasn't good. My first couple of years was horrible, garbage. Like literally couldn't. Like on defense, I just kind of went through, but I'm sure I got offsides a lot. Like I wasn't good. My freshman year, I had a couple, like 1 or 2 good games, and then I tanked. I had some bad games, and then all of a sudden, like just – because when you try to do something, a lot of the times we try to do these things in life that they spark our interest. Like we have, you know, passions to do something, but we're not very good at it at first. And so what ends up happening is in the beginning, like because you're not good at it, you don't want to keep experiencing that pain of like, ah, this sucks. So what you do is you find outlets that are opposite of that, or find ways to make great excuses to pursue something different and give up on that idea. And so for me, I gave up on football at a certain point. After 2 years, after my freshman year of high school, like I had a couple bad games and I was like, dude, I'm not good at this. I don't want to feel like this anymore. I'm not going to play anymore. And I pretty much chalked it up. And there was a moment in time where I got to do something that most people don't ever have a chance to do. But let's say you're in the middle of something and you feel like it sucks. We make great excuses as to why we can't do it. I don't got enough money. I don't have enough experience. I've never done it before. I'm just going to fail. Someone else is already doing that, so I can't do that thing, right? And so what ends up happening is it's an excuse you kind of bury inside. You live from it and you make excuses to live your life. And I was sitting in an English class. It was Mr. Howell's English class. It was my freshman year of high school. And I'd already pretty much like chalked it up. Like my adoptive mom was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So like my dad was focusing there. Fen was kind of distraught. My older brother was like the rock of my family, kind of like for me at least, took off the military. So I'm just floating. And the excuse I had created was, well, the reason I'm, you know, in this situation, I'm a foster kid. So, you know, I'm not supposed to do great. You know, my life's just going to be whatever it is. I'm a foster kid. Like statistically, we're not supposed to do well. And I'm sitting in this class and I'm halfway asleep and just two girls on a couch next to me. I'm in the back right corner. And one girl says to the other girl, well, the reason I'm so bad is because I'm in foster care. And it was like this, like really like sick feeling because I finally heard my excuse out loud and realized how stupid it sounded.
Yeah. You don't like the way it sounds.
Yeah. Like when you hear your excuse out loud and somebody else says it, you're like, that is a really dumb excuse. Is that the excuse I'm going to have? You know, when I look back at my life 5, 10, 20, 30 years from now and I don't have what I want, or for me, I'm going to be a criminal or like, you know, or be in jail. Like, is that what I really want? I was like, that's not the life I really want. I don't think any of us want that. And so it kind of made me kind of shift gears and go back to that thing that I love to do, which is football. And I had to convince myself that it was okay, give myself permission, which we have to at times, to put in all this crazy hard work before I knew I'd be successful. Because that's what success demands an investment of your heart and soul without a guarantee. And I did that. And then lo and behold, man, it turned out to be something great.
Yeah, it was awesome. Beyond great. But yeah, how do you have this mentality, though? You know, growing up this kind of, you know, crazy life full of, you know, just all these bad things happening all around you. And like you said, like this girl, she said, oh, I'm a foster care. And so many people, they do have excuses. And did you have some kind of a leader or someone you looked up to that you're like, no, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like these people. I want to be this type of person. Like, how did you have that? How did you process all this, especially at such a young age? Because even people in their 20s and 30s are making up excuses. And, you know, you yeah. who live this crazy life, even at 14, you're like, nah, fuck that. I don't want this.
Yeah. Well, you know, we try to, as human beings, stay in places that make us feel comfortable. And I think that's the root of a lot of people's issues and situations. Like, I don't even know if my mindset always was like, I want to achieve and I want to do great. Like, it wasn't that. It was like, I wanted to be great. So I had that aspiration for that. Right. And I think a lot of us have that. But the problem is what you have to sacrifice or do to get that is uncomfortable. It means changing habits. It means adjusting your lifestyle. I mean, if you're in your 20s, it means maybe stopping, you know, going out and partying and, you know, maybe stopping following the crowd. Maybe it means cut off a friend group. Maybe it means get out of a relationship. All things that are discomfort, like they're hard to do. And so for me, I think one of the big parts of my life was I dealt with so much discomfort early on that I realized I'm not going to die if I try this and fail. Yeah. And so part of it pursuing that big thing was like, I don't want to be where I'm at. And if I don't want to be where I'm at, the only thing that I can do to get to a better place is work myself out of this place. And yeah, I might fail. It's going to suck. But I'd rather have that discomfort than the discomfort of like, what if? Like legit, like I didn't want to regret kind of feeling. So started working, man. Little by little, you put time in and then you get to that point where it's like you literally fall in love with the process more than the end result. Like for me, legitimately, I've always fallen in love with like the crazy hard work, the grind. Like when you can find a way to find joy in that, even if it's just joy because you have more pride for yourself, all the rest of the stuff kind of falls into place the way it's supposed to. It's odd, but everybody's looking to get this thing. They're trying to get to that point. But along the way, if you just focus on the top, you take shortcuts. You miss things. Like you don't gain the tools you're supposed to have that you can use when you get to the top of the mountain, so to speak. So for me, it's always been a matter of like just love of the process of it, man. Like, and like fall in love with the hard work part of it, and the rest just kind of naturally takes care of itself.
Yeah, if you don't enjoy the process, you're not gonna be, you won't be able to get your result because you're gonna give up easier. It's a lot easier to give up when you know you're hating the process. But yeah, as long as you're learning, pushing yourself, that's the best part.
Yeah.
So then, what, at your sophomore, junior year, you start getting looked at by colleges, yeah. And you're blowing it up on the scene.
I think junior year, I started getting letters from schools. You know what it was? Is my junior year, I think might have been like the end of the junior year, like maybe in between junior and senior. There's a guy that went to a school called Deer Valley across town from us, and he actually got a scholarship to play quarterback at Washington State. So he goes to Washington State. He comes back and calls one of his coaches, like, hey, do you know any guys in the area that I could throw a ball to? And we can, you know, kind of help the, you know, me, and I'll help him and throw the ball around. I was like, yeah, you know, one of the guys said, yeah, this guy Anthony Truck was at Antioch High School. He goes, oh, I remember that guy. I played against him previously the year before. So we went to Piedmont High. We're throwing the ball around. He's like, dude, like, you're pretty good. He's like, I got guys that I, you know, up in Washington State where I'm at. He's like, you could run with these dudes. He's like, I'm gonna tell my coaches about you. So I guess he goes back, tells the coaches, they look up film. One of them like contacts me or something. I go up for a recruiting visit. So when you go up for a recruiting visit, it goes out in the wire, and all the different schools in the land, we'll call it, they start to get like notification of a new name. Like, oh, this school brought so-and-so in. Let's see who he is. And next thing you know, from that like visit, I start getting letters like up the yin-yang, a bunch of scholarship offers. And that was it, man. The kind of rest was history. I started going to different trips. Funny thing, I went to Washington State, but I had trips scheduled to like to Michigan, Nebraska, I think still, I think Utah. And I don't know, I think there might have been like one or two other ones. I can't remember. But I go to Washington State first visit, and I commit, like, I'm going to Washington State. And I go home, and I cancel my trips. The guys at Oregon were like, no, we're not going to stop bucking you. So they kept calling me. I eventually took a trip to Oregon and actually decommitted from Washington State to go to Oregon. And I canceled all my trips because my coach was like, dude, if you go another trip, you're going to end up committing to the next school too. So just stop.
What was it about Oregon that you loved so much?
I had a lot of guys in the Bay Area where I'm from. There's a lot of guys that, you know, same area, knew the same kind of people, some of the same schools. Like, so my son now goes to school called De La Salle. And when I went up to Oregon, one of the guys that was there, he had just graduated from De La Salle and was up at Oregon then. So I was like, he was like my host. So showed me around town. We knew some of the same people. So it was kind of like that familiarity type thing. That was one of the bigger pieces. And it's a short car drive. Like, it's 8 hours as opposed to like a 14-hour drive from, you know, the Palouse up in Washington.
Yeah. So it's a little bit more comfort, and or those are two top programs. And you guys had some really successful seasons at Oregon.
We did.
Yeah, yeah. You guys, we did. You guys went to a couple bowl games.
Yeah, then we didn't at one point.
Yeah, that one year.
When I first went up there, it was a funny thing. 2 weeks before signing day, I get a call from USC. They want me to play receiver. Like, we want to offer you a scholarship to play receiver here at USC. And I'm like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm going to Oregon because they had just got done being number two in the country, beating Colorado. Uh-huh. And then, you know, I go to Oregon, and the next like three straight years, USC dominates. They get like three or four rings, like, you know, like in hindsight. But at the end of the day, like, I had a great experience there. And we did. My senior year, we went 10-1, only lost to USC. It was a Reggie Bush, Lendell White year. And yeah, man, it was a great experience. And then we ended up losing in the Holiday Bowl to Oklahoma, although I stripped Adrian Peterson at the goal line at one point. It was a cool play.
Damn, that's awesome. I didn't know that. I got to find that video. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's on my YouTube somewhere, I think.
Yeah, I'll dig for it. I'm going to find it. That's awesome. So then after that, you go into the NFL. Undrafted rookie. You're on the Bucs?
Yeah, with the Bucs.
With John Gruden, right?
Yeah, Chucky.
How's John Gruden as a coach?
What you think, man? He's a fiery dude.
Yeah.
It was crazy. My position coach in college was he was worse than Gruden. He was a hard nosed dude. Like, nothing got by him. You were everything early. You know, if you were 30 minutes early, you're on time. Like, if you're on time, you're 30 minutes late. Like, it's, dude, everything, it's just awkward. So when I got to the Bucks, like, I met, you know, Chucky, I call him Chucky, I don't know. You meet Gruden, like, he's a fiery dude. Hey, how you doing? It? He has like, it's a scowl, but it's just him. But fiery dude, man, like, and he, you know, has a passion for the game. And so it was, in my experience, it was a cool chance to play for the guy. I had no problems with him. He operated well, you know, did a good job. Like, he was fiery. He was intense, but he wasn't a bad human being at all.
So is he going to turn around the Raiders or what?
Nope.
Not going to happen. Yes. Right. So then from there, you're on the Redskins, right? And then they cut you, and then you're on the Steelers and you got hurt. Your shoulder goes.
Yeah, man.
And then that ended your career.
End the career. First it was the season. And then you try to come back. And the problem is I have two broken wrists. Well, I had this one where I broke in high school and college. That's why I think I broke in college, but I don't think I ever had surgery. I thought it might have been a crack or something, but it's been fine. Tore my right shoulder in college. Now the left shoulder in the NFL. And in the NFL, I had over years like of just football, like my lower back had got kind of like two discs had got kind of degenerative and bulged. So they caused some pain periodically. And the one of the three things you never want to have your linebackers have issues with are wrists, shoulders, and back. So after this, you know, two shoulder surgeries, two wrist surgeries, and low back issues, it wasn't happening. I mean, so I tried to go back
There was a point in time, I think I got like a contingent offer from like one of the teams, but it wasn't a full, it was like, you know, full, it wasn't full because it would have had to have me say they're not going to cover my shoulders, which, it, you know, can't do that. So you go to the NFL and all of a sudden you get hurt. Like, I got to pay for shoulder surgery if something happens. Like, that's not, you know,
that's not worth it.
My entire check for the year gone, you know. So it was just, it was tough, man. I had to hang it up and move on to, I want to say greener pastures, but they were dark brown pastures at first.
They always are, yeah.
You got to reintroduce yourself to the world. That's a lot of the stuff I do now is how do people navigate like shifts and transitions in life? How do you figure that whole like, you know, gamut out of life changing underneath you, whether by force or by choice? Because for me, it happened by force. I lost my career. I spent 13 years doing something I could no longer do now. And I had to figure out, one, who am I without this sport? Two, what skill sets do I have that I can apply to the world and bring any kind of value? Because all my peers are, you know, 8-9 years ahead of me. They've been, you know, fresh out of high school. They've been in the game in school, like, or sorry, in the workforce. Or I'm fresh out of, you know, college, and you at least had internships while you were in college, and you've gotten to a job. Like, I got none of that. I can hit people and run fast, but, you know, I can't go out to, you know, I can't go down to the local grocery store and get a job doing that. So that was an odd transition. That's kind of where, you know, I kind of had to figure out who I was again.
How did you figure it out? What was that process like? Because
it's incredibly difficult. You know, it's not unique to athletes. I mean, this happens when you're a college student and now you're in the real world, or you're a mom and you have your kids and all of the kids finally go off to school. And so you drop them off the first day at 8 a.m. and you had nothing until 3. Well, what do you do now? Like, I'm not mom now. Or it's the military person that, you know, was in this military for 3-4 years and then they get out. And now it's like, well, what do I do? Like, you know, it happens all over the place. And the problem is a lot of us never get to, in the beginning, figure out who we are. We're always trying to find ourselves. And then it's like life, because it's so like malleable, it's always changing. When we feel like we got a grasp on something, something changes. And so I think for me, one of the things that allowed me to figure out the whole process was I did what a lot of people don't do, which is I dropped the ego and accepted who I was. Like, I am just a dude who used to play a sport and I'm not that special anymore. Yeah. Like, that's the first part of it, man. Like, I got to find a way to serve the world from the beginning. Just like when I come into a new team, I'm a rookie, right? I'm now a rookie in the world. And I think a lot of people, they leave the world they're at and they want to bring that same clout with them somewhere else. And it's very difficult to do it because outside of that world, nobody cares who you are.
Yeah.
Like, no one cared about the guy that used to play in the NFL. Like, my old high school wouldn't even have me come back and help coach. Right.
Really?
And I'm this dude, it's nuts. Like, that's what you run into. And so in the rest of the world, nobody cares. So what I think of, for me, the big step and where a lot of people got to start is just first, like, accept where you're at. And then from that point, like, you got to figure out really, like, how do you adapt yourself to the rest of the world? There's a lot of steps in between. I have like a whole framework I teach this stuff on. But overall, the end result is like, how do I adapt myself to this world? First step is just accepting who you are. And then from there, you can start giving yourself permission to try new stuff, fail a whole lot. And then navigate the world just kind of by taking action to see what you like and don't like. And that's really it. The weird thing is my entire life's been this. Like, from a kid, like, trying to figure out who the hell is Anthony. You know, I'm not the mom and dad. I'm this foster kid. What does that mean? I'm the only black kid in all white family. Like, where do I have my sense of solidarity? I'm the athlete now, and I don't know what that means. I'm late in the game. I'm the late blooming athlete. Now I'm the star athlete. What the hell do I do with that? Like, you know, I'm the homecoming king at one point in time. My fiance and me were the cutest couple, had a kid at 19, met my biological dad like my sophomore year of college. Like, now I got to figure out who am I with this new dad kind of thing. Like, it's just, dude, that's just up until my 20s. Like, it continues. Like, my life has been this weaving and bobbing of just a bunch of weird, awkward transitions. And I think when I peel the layers back and I try to like open this kind of, you know, path for people to follow. A lot of it starts with just like accepting this is who you are, the good parts and the bad. You know, like, I come from situations that are the greatest. I've done dumb stuff, like, but that's who I am. And now that I give myself permission to make mistakes, I can try stuff that gives me clarity in who I am.
Yeah, no. And I feel like with the NFL, no one does care unless you're like the top of the game, like top of the game. And even there's Hall of Famers that people don't, you know, care about once you enter the real world. It's all right. Yeah. You're trying to make a buck. Me too. You know, you're trying to start a business. Me too. Yeah.
And no, when you come out, they know that you ain't nobody.
No.
Like, they You might have some money, might, because most guys, 73% go bankrupt in 3 years. Like, you might. But after that, it's like, all right, we can do the next 30 years, man, 40 years, however long you play, live. It's a different world. And most of the time, what I've found is coming out of sports, it's harder to climb a ladder because people have this almost like view. It's not even a perception. It's almost like, I want to see if I can outdo this guy because the rest of the world thought he was great. Let me hold him down.
Yeah.
Let me find, you know, like, and I, so oddly, I get the least love at home of all places in the world. No one at home, guys I used to play with, coach used to coach, I get zero love. And I'm an outgoing, happy guy, but it's like they don't proactively go to help me because in their head, like, oh, he don't need no help. He's already been this level. And anytime they can get a chance to kind of be above or do something, you know, they do. With my business, with my interactions with other people, it's super odd, but like I become really like reclusive at home. I when I'm in my hometown, man, I just stay to myself.
Yeah, it's sad that the people are like comparing themselves to you like that. They like think that you hit the jackpot, that you're in the NFL, but no, that's not the case. You worked your ass off to get there.
I don't think people take anything from it. When you achieve something great, it's that same concept of people want to see you do well, but never better than them. And the moment you do, they're not going to help you keep climbing because it takes their ego down and nobody wants to see that. So they stop helping you climb.
Yeah, that's unfortunate how that is. There's very few people that I feel like actually want you to succeed and will help you succeed. But for the most part, everyone's like, yeah, it'll be cool if he succeeds, but, you know, he could also fail. I don't really care. It doesn't change my life kind of mentality.
Yeah, sadly, it's true. Yeah.
So what did you figure out then?
About what?
Like, after football, you said you were trying to figure out what you wanted to do. What'd you end up doing? What was your next step?
Well, my degree is in kinesiology. So I did this thing that no other athlete ever thought of doing, and I went home and I opened a gym. Everybody does it, man. But here's the thing. I was the guy who has an education in it. Like, I actually went to school. I was in the chemistry and the physiology and, you know, kinesiology classes, cadaver stuff. Like, I was doing calculus. I did it all. So I legitimately got my brain dialed into the body and how it works. So when I came home, I, you know, started training people, and I over years started climbing into more of like the educational role. So I started speaking for my certifying body. I was traveling the world. Like, I went as far as like Russia and like was teaching, you know, fitness stuff. And so in my space, I was doing well. The problem was I had life in the background going on. I had issues with my marriage. I ended up getting divorced, had three kids, and I was just crazy and hectic. The gym in and of itself, I started kind of getting tired of the gym, and it was a bunch of weird stuff. It just continued to happen because this is life. And what I realized was there's more inside of me than just the guy who's a personal trainer and gym owner. There's more to my weird skill set of being able to speak, caring about people, my life experiences. I feel like the gym was a way for me like to kind of hone my skills of just empathy, communication, dealing with people, like, you know, running a business. And then I happened across a guy named Brennan Burchard, his event called Experts Academy. And he teaches people how to take what you've experienced in life and possibly patch it up and teach people how to navigate a pitfall that maybe you've navigated. And so 2014, closed the gym, ventured into the world of speaking, and the rest is history in the making still. Like, it's still a cool, fun climb. I get to meet awesome people and help a lot of awesome people. And that's kind of how I found myself. A lot of it was just trial and error, a lot of mistakes, a lot of mess ups. I did almost go bankrupt. Like, it's a whole long, crazy journey, man.
How'd you almost go bankrupt? With the business, right?
Yeah, it was the gym business. Yeah. The first year, 2008, I opened it. 2009, like, I had rent that I couldn't pay. So I'd first had a couple guys start with me. I fired these guys because one was stealing money from me. And then I had these guys that I hired to do some stuff, and I couldn't. Weren't making enough revenue to pay rent. And 3 months go by, landlord sends me a pretty much like a guy on a Harley with an envelope. So you, Anthony Truck, said, yeah. And he hands me this envelope and drives off, and it's an eviction notice. I got 2 weeks to come up with $16,000. And I had maybe been making like three or four every month. Like, we got no money coming in, or I'm gonna be evicted in 2 weeks and go bankrupt because I still owed like $200,000 on the lease. So I'm in a tough situation, and I think the biggest thing I had to deal with was the aspect of I'm Anthony Trucks, football player, but I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that was the one where a lot of us, we don't get to that point of like, yeah, you're so-and-so, but you don't know what you're doing. And so the moment you can repeal like that, the ego back a little bit, and then like ask for help is the moment you actually get things to work. So I took the last $4,000 I had like in my account that I could use towards this. And legit, I just gave it to one guy, a consultant, and said, help me. And I gave every dime to him. Within 3 months, we had gone from like three or four, I think it was like around five-ish thousand to I think $27,000 a month. You know, way out of debt, bought a new car, like life was moving smooth. Within 2 years, moved to a bigger facility in a brand new space. Like it all went well. All because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. And you went out and got some help. That's awesome. How'd you come up with the 16,000 in 2 weeks?
So what we did, if you really want to know the strategy, you make it what's called an A, B, and a C list. And an A, B, and C list works like this. An A list is people who know what it is you do. They're ambassadors. They love your stuff. A B list is someone who knows what you do but hasn't yet worked with you or experienced your service, your product. The C list is people who pretty much have no idea what you do. They might know you exist, but they have no clue what you do. And then what you do is you pretty much make a list of people and you call everyone on your list. So for the C list, you say, hey, my name is Anthony Trucks. I'm the founder, you know, of Trucks Training. Would you be interested in finding out more about what we do at our gym? Yes or no? Yes. Cool. So they move to the B list. They know who I am. They know what I do. They haven't yet experienced it. The idea is now you call everybody from the B list. Hey, I know you know what I'm doing. You haven't had a chance to come in. I'd love to invite you to a free session or to join a group, whatever it is. So they get a chance to come and experience it. They move to the A list. A list is someone that says, hey, I love this stuff or I don't like this stuff, right? Whatever it may be. You just keep moving people from the C to the B and the B to the A list. And that's how you just keep rolling. You call all day. So within the first week of doing that, just making a list of like a couple hundred phone numbers, the next week we brought in like $8,000. And the next week after that, I think it was like $8,000 or $10,000. So I was able to pay off the $16,000 like within a couple weeks. And it was just simplistic, tedious, very uncomfortable work. Yeah. I mean, literally the verbiage was, hey, I'm in a tough situation, need some help, trying to make sure my business grows and scales. I would love your help by allowing me to serve you and help you reach your fitness goals.
Yeah.
Like you had to be transparent. People responded to it. And it's just, it was crazy. It's crazy in business, people who do service stuff, how close you are to a good amount of money when you can step out of your ego box and ask for help.
Or admit that you don't know what you're doing, that you're not all that, you don't know all the answers, ask for some help and you can hit the jackpot.
That's it, man. It's the first step of it all.
So then right now what you're doing is you're consulting for multi-million dollar companies and you have a business where you talk with aspiring business owners and you have your three-step trust your hustle process.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that. See, sacrifice, sustain.
Yeah. So there's – so see, sacrifice, sustain applies to a couple things. I've actually oddly my business has shifted from coaching business owners to more people. More so because I find that a lot of the strategies I teach, and you'll find anywhere, people who watch videos and buy courses and buy programs, you know, 97% of courses people buy don't finish, like they don't get completed. It's super amazing how many people don't apply what they have. And I was trying to figure out, why is it that my clients who are paying me well, they're not getting the results that I want them to sometimes, or it takes longer, or people that buy the courses, they never complete them. And so I started like looking at what it is that these strategies that people get, you know, ask of them. And the problem is, whether it's my course or anybody's course or a book you read or some, you know, advice you get, there's usually some step in that process that you don't identify yourself with. Like somewhere on the lines, if it says, I need you to do a live stream every single day, right? If you're a person's like, oh, but I don't do live streams, or I'm not good on camera, or, you know, I don't know what to say in a video. Like, if you become that person, what happens is there's a separation between who you think you are identity-wise and who the person has to be to get the results you want. And no matter what strategy you try to apply, if you can't connect yourself to be the person that identifies with those actions, you'll never get the result. And that for me has been the biggest piece as I kind of transition my business. But the see, sacrifice, sustain still stays true in all of it. No matter where you are or what you do in life, this is a humanity. This covers all bases. The first step is C. And any step you want to get, you know, of some goal met or some progress made, I got to see where I'm at. That is a duality. One, it's the aspect of seeing, why am I stuck? Ego. Why am I here? What am I sucking at? What do I got to fix? Where I got to give myself permission to actually move in the right direction? And that's the C part. It's literally just seeing things. Then it's seeing opportunities, like humbly seeing opportunities and then, uncomfortably seeing opportunities like, oh, I can go after that. It's a big challenge, but maybe I could, right? And there's that thought that we see opportunity, but some of us will play small. We'll play below it so we don't lose. We don't fail, right? Those are people who are scared of failure so much so that they won't ever taste amazing success because the fear of failure is too great for them. And so once you now see why you're stuck and find a way to get unstuck and then see an opportunity and you can craft a plan to go after it, the next part is one that most people, they don't do very well or don't do consistently enough to get a result. And they don't sacrifice. Sacrifice is one that's it takes place in a lot of areas. If I say you have to sacrifice to get your dream, your goal, like people get that.
Yeah.
But the problem is people don't understand that sacrifice has two sides, like a coin. One side is the things that you should not sacrifice, but you do. Your health, relationships, your peace of mind, your sanity, right? And so what happens is people will gladly give all their time, all their energy, all their everything to this thing. And they don't have a clear path to get there. So they've sacrificed all these things that really are important. Like people will say my family's the most important thing. But then you work so hard that when you're with your family, you're thinking about work. You're sacrificing quality time with the people that matter the most that you're saying you're working for.
Yeah.
Right. So there's that piece there. But there's also things people don't sacrifice that they should. We've talked about it. They don't sacrifice their ego. Like they don't lay it down and say this thing needs to die because it doesn't serve me. They also don't sacrifice their comfort zones. Like they don't go to that level outside of what they've done. Like I hate when people say, I've tried everything. Nothing's going to work.
You haven't tried everything.
You've tried everything you feel comfortable trying or that you want to try. And you feel comfortable trying is within that comfort zone. And no to try is within the ego place. So you only know what you've asked to know or you figured out. You don't know everything. So I hate when people say that I've tried everything. You haven't sacrificed enough of your ego and your comfort zone to seek those answers out. So no, you haven't tried everything. You just tried what you want to try. The last piece is one that's like it's borderline like an effort piece. It's a sustain. Like the idea is I don't want to have success today and no success tomorrow. I don't want to ride the up and down roller coaster in life. I want some sense of solidarity. We as human beings love consistency. It's homeostasis. We need that. But a lot of people, they'll get to a point where they have success. They're moving. Everything's going grooving well. But the moment they get to the top of the mountain, they stop working and they fall back down without even knowing it. So they wake up one day like, how do I get back down to the bottom of the mountain? And they just slid back down because they didn't continue the actions that they had to put in place to reach the top. And they also at the top of the mountain didn't reset their focus. So we get out of the hole and most people are like, they're climbing, climbing, climbing. Okay, I'm out of the hole. And don't realize that level of work you put in, you're normalized that now. Continue doing that so you never have to go back to the place you're at, have to restart again. People who have like yo-yo diets or up and down businesses, they're just working to get out of a hole over and over and over again. And it's frustrating for me to deal with that or look at that because it was me. I would do that. Get out of my hole and the next day, bro, why are we broke again? Like what's going on? And so one of the things I'm keen on teaching people is, hey, how do you reset once you get to the top? How do you keep checking, keeping tabs and kind of checking a pulse of where you're at? And then keep pushing the envelope, resetting your structured goals and work higher.
Yeah. I really connect with the sacrifice part right now where I'm at. I feel like when you're talking about sacrifice, you're talking about also having a balance in your life, knowing what to sacrifice and when to sacrifice it. And that's what I feel like the more because what I did is I quit my job earlier this year, traveled a little bit, and then, tried starting up my own business. And that's why I'm like podcasting now, kind of stopped trying to do that. Now I'm doing this. The more I realize as I'm doing this, I've realized that my entire life I've kind of had trouble balancing everything. There's never been like a clear balance between, whether it's school or work or working out, relationships. It's always like maybe two or three things, but not this huge broad balance that I've always had trouble with. And now I'm realizing that. And now that you mentioned that, it's like, maybe on the weekends I don't need to be working, spend time with my friends because I don't spend time with my friends, on the weekdays. But I feel like also when you're starting a business, you do need to sacrifice weekends and some of that time. But it's like, when do you do it? When's right? When's wrong? And
you know, I have a weird perspective on this because I got a family. I've got three kids and the weekends to me are pretty much ghost. They're gone. But I'll get more done in a week, in a day than most people get done in a week. And the one thing that I've realized is the hard part, which I know you're in this place. I'm just going to make this assumption because if you're starting, I know where you're at. The problem is there's 15 things to do. I need to get them all done. I don't know when I'm going to get them done, but I know they got to get done. So I'm going to work on this thing now. But the problem is I'm working on this thing now, but I'm thinking about all the other 14 things that got to get done. So I can't focus fully to get this thing knocked out. And so what happens, I'm in this constant sprint so that I can get something done. When you got on the phone with me earlier, I was getting sidetracked.
Yeah, you're good.
But I had a lot of things chiming in. I got to knock them out. But what I typically do, and this is for my recommendations, first off, balance comes not from balancing time. You're going to go at one speed. You will go at your speed. Take things off that can't allow you to move at the speed you go. Take them out of the plate. Like, get rid of them. They may sound juicy and fun and great, but a business isn't a business. If you're just doing tasks, it's got to run. And yeah. If it slows your process down, it's got to go for now. Put it back in the pot, we'll call it. Two, get yourself to a point where you section off like segmented time and you have no like random chill time. Like whenever I got like bubbles of time, like I don't know what to do, scares the crap out of me because I'm like, I'm wasting time somewhere if I'm just chilling right now in a non-work time. So what I recommend is I have a planner across from me I created. You literally just take the day, every hour of the day. And then what you do is put, I'm sleeping, I'm eating, I'm with friends. You block the stuff out that's life. You'll be left with work sections. You may be 2 hours here, 4 hours there, an hour here. Who knows where it's at? But like that 30 minutes between, you know, when I get off the podcast with you and I have something else, that could be a valuable 30 minutes if you already know what you're going to do in that time frame.
Yeah.
So once you have this clean slate of just stuff floating, this is anybody. It's not just business owners, obviously. But when it's all floating around in that space, the next thing you do is say, okay, cool. What are the four projects I'm going to work on? And then segment those down. What are the – of project one, what are the six steps for project one? You know, or what are the three steps of project two? You'll be left with a bunch of steps. And then you take those and you infuse them into your open blocks in your schedule. This is so simple.
Yeah.
But it's powerful, right? You're like, oh, yeah, it seems easy. But people don't do it like this for some reason. And then what you do is you leave a gap like in the middle of the week or the end of the week for catch-up time. And now all you do is you start working in that block on that thing and you just do that thing. But the cool part is when you're working on project A, step one, because you know when the rest of the projects will be done, usually obviously do it ahead of the – you schedule it before its due date. Because you know when it's going to be done, there's peace in this moment to work on just that thing because I know the rest will be completed when it's supposed to be completed.
Yeah.
Then easily go into – the moment and work on that thing. And then if you have structured in there like dinner with the boys, you can be at dinner with the boys and be at peace because you know, hey, tomorrow when I get up in the morning, I have the first 2 hours doing this, it's going to get done. And if you can do that, you'll find you start knocking stuff out fast you've ever done in your life and you're way more at peace while doing it.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to start doing that. I started journaling a little bit last week. And when I journal in the morning, I like, all right, this is what I got to get done in the morning. Or this is what I got to get done today. And I've been like crossing them off. And it really I realized like, all right, like I don't care about the little things. It's the big things. Like, all right, what do I need to do today to make sure that this grows as much as possible, you know? But yeah, I mean, that's, I'm for sure going to start doing that because there are times during the day where, like you said, like if this podcast ends early or whatnot, you have some extra time. You're not thinking, what can I do? It's all right, this is what I can do. I got this already set up.
Yeah. Knock it out. That's the thing. And that the crazy part is if you can figure that process out and schedule as your business grows, then you get teammates. You hire a team person. But now the process is in place. I know every Monday at this time I may make my Instagram post. You know, hey, I'm going to get hold of a VA here. Every Monday I need this done by this time. So they can do that. But because your processes are in place and the business starts running and creating revenue, now you can start outsourcing things you don't want to do. And now you can have some of your free time back. But it's only going to happen when you have a process for everything. You're just your life sort of process. Because if not, then you're going to get up every day and tell your business what to do. And the moment you forget something, the business doesn't do it.
That's true.
The business operate and tell you what to do every day.
Yeah. It's like plug and play kind of mentality. It's, yeah, you have all these things you got to do, but you can, once you start growing, you can start outsourcing, other people can start doing it. And no, I love it. Yeah, that's great. So, but you said you're currently shifting your brand a little bit beyond Trust Your Hustle. So what's going on with that?
So like I just mentioned earlier, I guess for me, the big stagnation point that I see with a lot of people is like, I'll give them information, I'll give them strategies, but then they don't do it. And that's everybody though. Yeah. People get what's called shelf esteem. I buy this thing, goes in the shelf. I feel great because I bought it. But the reality is we don't do anything with it. And I was trying to figure out what is the reason why no one takes action. And a lot of it boils down to there's way too much information in our world right now. There's a ton of information, and people don't – they don't execute on stuff because they don't see themselves as that person yet. They'll tell you that they, I'm going to be successful, I'm going to be great. But deep down, they don't sit back and say, that is me. Like, I am that person. I'm the guy that has the amazing podcast. I'm the guy that people seek out. Like, that's me. And own that to the extent of your actions follow suit. Because when you own that, you tighten up. You get things done. It's not just you in a room playing around, hanging out, making stuff. Like, you start executing. And so I realized that that's the area that, for me, I love, because that's a shift. That's a shift of everything. It's a shift of your identity, a shift of your work ethic, shift of how you see your body, how your relationships work. And so for me, I realized that I was bypassing the biggest asset that I have as a human, which is I was bypassing that to work on the business side. But I realized that I need to go that step back and sit there and help people with that. How do you navigate transitions and shifts in your life? How do you, even if it's not business, if you're a mom, if you're a coach, if you're a dad, if you're anybody coming out of college, no matter what, life is constantly changing and shifting, and people do that so poorly because they don't know who they are. They don't know why they're here, what they're supposed to do with their life. And they don't understand that even if force happens because I'm stagnant and I want to change, how do I change? What do I start? Like, what do I do? Or something just happened and I'm being forced to change. Holy crap, how do I deal with this? And that's where my work is now.
How did you figure to transition to this from business owners to kind of, like you said, people? When did you like decide that I want to make this switch? Or did you just notice that, like, all right, I'm doing this business thing, but I have so many individuals coming up to me?
No, man, it was, I've always, if you look at any of my content, even while I've done business coaching, it's always been like life, happy, joy. Yeah. I just have a passion for people to create. And then when it happened, I went to a mastermind with like Brent. So it's small mastermind out in Wyoming with Brendan Burchard, like Dean Graziosi, Lewis Howes, Trent Shelton, Jeff Walker, like all these big dudes, like Russell Brunson's there. These amazing people that are like just brains. I mean, way, way smarter than me. And, you know, everyone gets a chance to kind of talk about their thing, what they do and where they're at. You know, all these guys are talking about the, obviously some interesting in-depth, like, yeah, I'm making $100 million a year now. What do I do? Like, I don't have that problem yet. So I give them my spiel. I say, you know, I do Trust Your Hustle. Here's my story. And one of the guys speaks up, named Ethan. He says, I don't like it. Like, what do you mean you don't like it? He's like, well, at the end of the day, he said, it's difficult for me to see myself in Trust Your Hustle. So that sounds powerful and cool, but he says, all of us in this room, we hustle. Like, we get down. A lot of people in the world, they hustle, right? And he says, you may hustle harder, but like, how do you teach that, right? But then he says, you know, when I listen to your story, what I do notice that I would want to know more about is like, how did you navigate these shifts? How did you get here in a circle? Like, what is it you did? And the kid who was a foster kid and grew up in a weird situation, we're like, how'd you even know who you were when you were adopted? Like, is this all white family? How'd you figure out the sports thing? He says, how do you navigate being a teen father, you know, finding your dad? Like, how'd you go into the sports world, come out of the sports world, not fall apart? How'd you navigate your divorce? Like, he's like, all these things. He's like, dude, like, you got some crazy weird stuff you've done, and that is of value to me, and I believe the world. And so that was like a really big eye opener for me to like to step back and realize that I was like, I've always been talking about the stuff of my clients, but I've always kind of tried to just kind of fast pace it to teach a strategy. But the reality is my strength is in that humanity of a person and teaching them how to be a better them at the end of the day, or how to really be them and do it in a way that allows them to apply everything they've been learning to get the result they want in life.
Do those mastermind groups, do they work? I know like people are always talking about them. They're like, you know, the hot topic now. Do you recommend them?
Yeah. Well, this one is not a paid one. This was literally just an invite. I oddly didn't pay a dime for it. It was an incredible blessing. And this was like, it's different. Like, some masterminds are built specific ways. This is more of like, get cool minds together, get that one singular idea that catapults your life and business, which I got by all means, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I've got that. I've already made great bookings and speech fees within like the next week. I booked a week after that whole meeting. I had a $25,000 booking for that new topic out of the blue.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy, right? So I believe that masterminds do work if you go into them with the right perspective. I don't think you can go there and say, hey, solve my problems. It's about going back and forth and getting information that you can apply. If you're not a person that applies information, it's going to be useless to you. But if you're a person that can take the information and do something with it, it'd be golden.
Yeah. No, I definitely see that. Yeah, don't go over to one of these things expecting someone to fix your problems. Go there and asking questions and, you know, thinking for yourself because, yeah, I mean, people will help you, but they don't want to run your business for you.
They can't. Yeah, that's the thing. I've actually, since having that conversation, I have hired a coach. So I am now investing up to $80,000 in a coach right now to help me rebrand this entire thing, right? So I'm not sitting here saying, you know, that I'm above it. I am at that level where I'm investing in a coach myself to help me get ready to go. You got to admit you need help, and I do need help. There's a lot of stuff I know, but it's kind of like being a person that's like a bunch of skill sets and not knowing what to do. Like, I can cook anything, you know, in the house, but what do I cook? And what's the order? Like, you know what I mean? So yeah. It's like I can do all the digital stuff, video stuff. I can make a bunch of things up, but I got to make the right stuff. I need the recipe. And he had the recipe, and so we're cooking.
Yeah, that's great because that's what I feel like so many young business owners, and even I have this problem sometimes. It's like, all right, I know how to do all this stuff, but how do I know what I'm doing is the right thing? How do I know the path I'm on is the right path? You don't know, and it's trial and error. That's all.
Yeah, or you take somebody else who did the trial and error.
Yeah.
Invest in that to shortcut your results, and it's a weird – again, it's an ego thing. Most people are like, I'm too proud to hire someone and say I got a coach. Dude, how are you going to help somebody but not get help yourself?
Right? Yeah, exactly. That's what I was about to say. Thank you for jumping on. This was a pleasure. I really enjoyed this and really learned a lot. I, you know, if we do this again, I definitely want to talk about Ninja Warrior a little bit, your TV show, all that good stuff.
That's a whole other conversation in and of itself, for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Anthony, thank you so much. I'm wishing you the best. I'm looking forward to following you along your journey.
I appreciate it, man. Take care.
All right, thank you. Someone bless me, I got the holy water. Feel it through your body, your medulla oblongata. Baby, feel the bounce, I got it from my mama. Got it from my mama, got it from my mama. I do my bang like a cold kid. That's the first line of the day. Max Payne, I'ma murder the day. Working like my mama who be working for the raise. Yeah, I love your mama. A lot of people rapping, a lot of people talking. Nobody make it up. Take you to Chicago, they gon' put your Jeep car. I bet you're not the kingpin that you say you are. Run it on the highway, I need a red carpet on my driveway. I'm a monster, heard it midway. Put your way, I do this shit my way. I need all your energy, I need you to believe. All mind, body, and soul. I need all your energy, I need you to believe. All mind, body, and soul. Go. I need all your energy, I need you to believe. Through your body, your medulla oblongata. Baby, fear the bounce, I got it from my mama. Fear the bounce, I got it from my mama. Someone bless me, I got the holy water. Feel it through your body, your medulla oblongata. Baby, fear the bounce, I got it from my mama. Got it from my mama, got it from my mama. Blood so big that they call me Big Pop. Outbreak kid, yeah, they call me Showstopper. Dick so big that my bitch got a problem. White skinny kid, but they call me Don Don. This all me, I ain't get it from my father. If you thirsty, I got the holy water. Tell the streets, call the priest, tell your friends, tell your mama. I got the holy water. Get jiggy to the beat like an info group in the sheets. I can do this all week. Love it so much, I do it for the free. When my heart feel the beat, it's like a new pair of Jordans just dropped in the streets. Run it on the highway. I need a red carpet on my driveway. I'm a monster, heard it midway. Put your way, I do this shit my way. I need all your energy, I need you to believe. All mind, body, and soul. I need all your energy, I need you to believe. All mind, body, and soul. I need all your energy, I need you to believe. All mind, body, and soul. I need all your energy, I need you to believe.
Divine gift does not come from a higher.